these days actually Sri Lanka is experiencing heavy rain, and that some areas are inundated. Anyway, now we have come to the next part of our mindfulness Poyangada session. So that is related to a sutta teaching session or discussing some teachings of the Buddha. Here, actually, nowadays we are discussing Kanta Visana Sutta. We can translate it as rhinoceros horn, and which is available in the Sutta Nipata. Sutta Nipata is one of the very popular, very interested book available in the Sutta Nikaya. There are many interesting sermons like Karmanika Sutta, Gajaka Sutta, and then Ratana Sutta, Mangala Sutta. All those very popular suttas are available in the Sutta Nipata, and similarly this Kanta Visana Sutta is also available in the Sutta Nipata. Now Kanta Visana Sutta is completely based on more than 40 verses, and those verses are attributed to various Pacheka Buddhas. As we know, there are different levels of enlightenment. So the fully enlightened and the self-enlightened Buddha, that is the Sammasam Buddha. And then we come across Pacheka Buddhas who also are self-enlightened, but only difference is that they are not teaching to the level of the Sammasam Buddhas, and they are not establishing the Sangha, the order of the Buddha, order of the Sangha. And the third category is the Arahants, who are the followers of the Sammasambuddha, who actually hear the teachings from the Sammasambuddha, and accordingly they are able to practice and attain path portion. These are the different levels of attainment explained in the Dhamma. Now, according to the commentary, so all these verses are uttered by different Pacheka Buddhas. And they actually were typically arising when the Sammasambuddha is not available in the world. And on such periods, these Pacheka Buddhas are realizing Dhamma by themselves, and they lead a very secluded life without involving with any other activities. And they are not much into teaching to the mass, teaching to the many people. But they are more preferred secluded practice. Now, in this verse, what we have come across is talking about various mundane worldly activities and how a typical world being, a layman, is living. Now, the story behind this is also attributed to a Pacheka Buddha, and he is also living a princely life. And he is a king. Only thing is that he became a king at his young age. And while he was enjoying his senses, his kingship, one day he himself thought, now all these different luxuries are available, and with those luxuries, and again all these, power assigned to me, I am not really leading a life which is much virtuous. So, because of my kingship, there are people who are subjected to death, subjected to various punishments. So, ultimately, I am the one who is going to be responsible. So, I am, in a way, by being a king, accumulated a lot of demerit. Akusala. Demerit. So he was reflecting like this. Now typically this is the opposite way of thinking. Typically people think, I want to become the president, I want to become the prime minister, I want to become the king. So they aspire to become the head of the country. And they never think that are there any repercussions, are there any consequences. Now if we can recall certain Jataka stories preached by the Buddha, there is one Jataka story called Tenya's Jataka. So they are Bodhisattva. So after being born again as a prince, So he got a kind of a knowledge through which he can recognize the past. He can understand the past lives. So there he understood he was a king long time ago, and he only ruled the country for 20 years. But unfortunately, he was destined to reborn in the hell realm, and there he spent 20,000 years. So you can recognize the difference. He, being a bodhisattva, ruled the country for 20 years, and anyway, due to his kingship, due to his ruling, the next life he was reborn in the hell realm for a long time, 20,000 years. Now after that, again he has become Prince Thaniel. Now he, after he got this clairvoyance, the previous life stories, Subbenivasanusupinyana, so some kind of an understanding about what has happened in the past. So now this Prince Thaniel is afraid of again becoming a king. So he behaved like a leper. Behaved like a person who can't walk, who can't do anything. Now, ultimately, the father king ordered to bring this prince to the forest and kill him. So, likewise, certain Jataka stories available explaining that being a king of the country is not always something really beneficial, rather it may have certain repercussions as well. Certain consequences are also there. Now this king anyway, who is capable, who is having a lot of farming as power, so he was thinking, he was reflecting, now I am being a king, now I am doing various administrative tasks, so certain people I have to kill, I have to punish, I have to put the death sentence. A capital punishment has to be given. So likewise, I am accumulating a lot of demerit. So better I stop all this and I better renunciate. So after he thinking like that, so he became a monk and he was practicing and he became the Paccheka Buddha. After he become the Paccheka Buddha, he uttered this verse. Puttancha dharam pitarancha mataram dhanani Dhanyani cha bandhavani, Yitvana kamani yathodikani, Eko chare kagya visana tapu. Puttancha dharam, pitarancha mataram. So these are some easy to understand words. Having abandoned children and wife, father and mother. Dhanani dhanan, dhanyani cha bandhavani, wealth, grain, and relatives. Now these are the typical things that we all like to have. Our mother, father, then wife, husband, children, and various relatives, and lot of wealth, and again lot of grain in the agricultural society. So these are the typical wealth that we are talking about. So having abandoned, so he is now talking of abandoning them, leaving them aside. Hitvana kamani yathodikani. Now leaving aside all these sensual pleasures and knowing their limits. Eko chare kagya visana kapu. Now I want to live as a rhinoceros fawn, being alone, practicing the seclusion. Now the next verse is also quite similar. Let's cover that as well. Sango eso arittameta sokhyam appasado dukkametta bhiyo galo eso iti nyatva mutima eko chare kagya visana kapu. Now this is also talking about the sensual pleasures. So both these verses are talking about the sensual pleasures. So before going to the detail of this verse, let's talk about the story behind this verse. Now here also another king. And he is quite fond of traveling. Another King Brahmadatta, who was fond of traveling, and there are many dancers to him, and some are quite old, coming from the king's father, and some are at their middle age, and some are quite young. So they are, in a way, we can say the group who are always ready to provide enjoyment to the king. So different dancers. Now one time, so he was interested of seeing some music and enjoying some music and dancing. So he invited the young dancers. So they performed really well. And king was not that happy. Now typically, he was quite happy because of these young dancers are quite attractive, beautiful, and they are doing their best, performing really well. And king was quite happy. And similarly, there are middle-aged dancers, though they are quite professionals and they have enough experience. They know what are the, tastes of the king. So they also dance quite well, and they also king become really happy. And there are other old dancers who are coming from the lineage who have served the king's father as well. So they also are quite experienced dancers, and they also really perform well, and king was quite happy. But now, after some time, king was not happy from these young dancers. So they are doing well, but king was thinking, now, this is something common. I mean, this is not something strange. Young dancers are always performing well. So I'm not that happy about it. So king was thinking like that. Now he went to another place where the middle-aged dancers are performing. And they also dance well. They did the music well, enjoyment, different things. But there also king was not that happy. So similarly, he was thinking, I mean, these middle-aged dancers are doing their best, and this is not something to be elated, it's quite ordinary. So likewise, he was thinking, and he was not becoming extremely happy, rather he became a little inquiring. Now next, he go to the old-age dancers, and they also try to please the king, they also doing their best. But they are also, the king was not happy. Now there's a kind of a transformation happens in the king's mind. Now he was enjoying his senses to the maximum as a king. And there are many groups of dancers available to satisfy him, to make him joyful. But now some sort of a maturity is happening in the king's mind. Now he was not happy about the performance and the delight that he is deriving from these dancers. Now he was thinking the opposite. He also thought, no point of living like this, always going after these sensual pleasures and looking at various these dancing performance and etc. So let me find something different. Let me find an alternative happiness. Different sort of happiness. Now he was thinking like that. And he too left the palace and became a monk. And he too then became a Paccheka Buddha. And after he becoming a Paccheka Buddha, this is the verse he uttered. Sango eso parittameta sokhyam. Appasabu dukkametta bhiyo. Sango is kind of a term for tie, kind of a bond. Eso parittametta sokhyam, and this is and it is deriving only a slight happiness, not large amount of happiness, but only a slight happiness. Appasadu, and it is giving little gratification. Appasadu, and dukkametta bhiyo, the suffering here is more and more. Now there is little happiness, there is slight happiness available, but the suffering involved is far more. So he is doing some sort of a comparison in the lay life, even his kingly life. So he is thinking, he was realizing there is some amount of happiness, but there are many more, much more amount of suffering. Galo eso iti nyatva mutima. This is a hook
Having known thus a thoughtful person. Now he is reflecting. Now this is in a way we can call yonso manasikara. So typically we don't think like this. We typically think that as much as possible I want to satisfy my senses, gratify senses. As much as possible I want to money, wealth, and many, many things, and never satisfied. So this is the typical way of going after the pressures, pressure principle. Now, one day there could be some sort of a different perspective happening in the minds of certain people, and the same thing has happened in this king. Now he got the thought, okay, there should be something different. So these pleasures, sensual gratification is short-lived, and again it involves a lot of discomfort, a lot of insecurities, and a lot of unhappiness or suffering. So after understanding that, should live alone like a rhinoceros form. Eko chare kanta visana kapu. So this is the repeated term in all the verses, almost all the verses. Eko chare kanta visana kapu. So one may live alone like a rhinoceros form. As I mentioned, Pacheka Buddhas are people who are really enjoying the seclusion. And after they becoming the Pacheka Buddha, so they are not spending a lot of time in teaching, but rather they spend more time in seclusion. So in a way we can say they are enjoying the Nibbana bliss rather than involving with various other activities. So here also, this Pacheka Buddha, after he becoming the Pacheka Buddha, he was explaining how he was a king, had everything, and he had three groups of dancers. But there was one day that he was not happy from any of those groups, and there he left the palace. And after continuing his practice, he was able to become a Pacheka Buddha. Now, these are, in a way, certain turning points happen in our lives. Maybe living very luxurious type of lives, and there may be enjoyment of senses, and we may have enough wealth, and we have our wife, husband, children, our car, our house, our job, etc. So, this we typically call as the success. And therefore, we are, as much as possible, human beings, we are going after these pleasures. So this is quite admittable. But even though they are having those things, there are certain people who are thinking the opposite way. So this is, in a way, we can say quite rare. Typically, people are obsessed with this kind of thinking. But on the other hand, there are certain people who are thinking different. So they contemplate, they actually reflect how things are happening, how much people are going after these sensual pleasures, and on the other hand, how much they are now satisfied. Now, typically, when we are thinking about the sensual pleasures, so when we think, okay, I want to have a good job, now I am learning for that, I am continuing my education, or I am going through certain courses to fulfill the requirements. Suppose that ultimately I got the job. But after having the job, still not satisfied after some time. Now you want to have a promotion. You want to transfer to a different department. You want to involve in something else. The assigned task is boring, so I am not happy about it. The assigned task is not in line with my qualifications, or the assigned task does not allow me to earn much, and or the assigned task is something which is not allowing me to go for a next promotion. So likewise, there are enough reasons not to be satisfied with our job. So similarly, there are the other part of the household life. Suppose you are married to a person, and after some time, probably, you might think he is not the best person. I have selected the wrong person. Probably I might have selected a different person. And my husband's job or my wife's job is not that, say, giving enough wealth to our family. Likewise, we can think in many different ways. So we are never satisfied in that way. So we are going after sensual pleasures, but after having something, we are never contented, rather always going after many more things. So that is the nature of our desires. It is not unique to yourself, but it is common to all the human beings. So we are going after certain things, and that is the bait, or that is the tie, and that is the hook. It's like a hook. It's the bait. Say when a fisherman is putting a bait to a fish is going after that. A fish thinks, okay, this is a good food. So he is going after it, and he may even swallow it. Ultimately, he gets hooked. Now, similarly, so there are a limited amount of satisfaction in the sensual environment, sensual pleasures, and we are going after it. So that appear like the hook. And we think, okay, definitely if I have that, I will be happy. If I have him or her, I will be happy. If I have the promotion, I will be happy. If I have a car, I will be happy. If I have a house, I will be happy. If I will be able to migrate, I will be happy. So likewise, we are always seeking different targets. If, different ifs are there. So once that is satisfied, now only for a short period we are happy. After that, our mind is searching for something else. Now we are keeping a different target, and we want to find happiness through something else. So likewise, it is always kind of a situation where we are not going to find complete fulfillment. But that is why Buddha mentioned uno loko, atitto, tanha daso, uno. Something is missing. Every time when we are looking at our lives, probably we might feel, okay, something is missing. I have everything, but feel something is missing. Say, for example, you are having a good job, you are having your wife, your husband, your children, they are also doing well. You are having a good house, a good vehicle, and your job is also a pretty good one. Then you can be completely happy. But still something is missing. So that is a problem. So if all the sensual pleasures and all this wealth are going to give the complete happiness or the ultimate happiness, then all the billionaires and all these rich people should be utterly happy. But they seem not. That's the problem. And they are giving some only a temporary satisfaction. And uno loko atitto. And it is always certain amount of unsatisfactoriness is there. So certain amount of discontent is there. Even though we have so many things, we are not fully satisfied with them. We are not deriving or experiencing complete contentment. Atitto. There is some sort of kind of unsatisfaction. Little amount of frustration, a feeling like something is missing. So such attitude is there. Tanha dasu, and we are kind of slaves to the craving. So this craving is operating in our minds. And therefore Buddha mentioned, so when we consider our life's journey, not only in this life, but also in this long, long samsara, Buddha mentioned, so the companion is not our wife or our children or our husband or our best friend. Rather, Buddha mentioned our companion, our lifelong companion in this long samsaric journey is nothing but craving. Tantha dutiyo puriso, diga madhana samsara. Therefore, Buddha mentioned, so this tantha, craving, is the companion. Craving is our partner. So we are always keeping craving close to ourselves. And whatever craving is requesting, we are quite bound to satisfy it. So we are spending many, many hours, we are spending sleepless nights satisfying craving. So these are something that we can think of. Anyway, these appear like quite opposite to the typical mundane worldly life. So spiritual life is something we have to carefully handle. So these readings or these sutras are not to arouse some sort of a complete discussion or other kind of a condemnation towards the lay life, but rather looking at from a different perspective. So it is true that we have something we are well to do, or we have certain wealth. But at the same time, we should recognize, are there any complete satisfaction available? So is there anything which is missing? So once I fulfill it, once I acquire it, will it satisfy to the 100%? So are there any other alternative paths? While being a layman, is it possible to practice Buddha's teaching? So these are the things, these are the queries that we can think of. Because Buddha didn't ask everyone to become monks. Rather, while being a lay person, can I still practice the mindfulness? Can I still practice the spiritual life? So therefore, Buddha's teaching help us to practice successful lay life as well as maintaining the spiritual component, not completely forgetting the spirituality, rather having a very healthy mental attitude, having a very good interrelationship between our close ones, and at the same time maintaining some sort of a direction into our lives. So even though we are going after various sensual pleasures, so they are not guaranteed. So we can't guarantee and say, okay, I'm going to have these sexual pleasures for this amount of period. So I'm going to have this satisfaction, going to have this wealth, etc. for a certain amount of period. So we can't guarantee like that. There are many, many disasters, many, many, calamities. Probably can happen, therefore we have to look at something different as well. So we have to have a kind of an alternative path. So that alternative path is something spiritual. So are there any different ways of looking at things? So that is what these two things in these two verses are highlighting, the Paccheka Buddhas are highlighting. So the typical sensual pleasures provide only a temporary happiness. So they may not provide complete contentment. And on the other hand, so we have to find out something, some spiritual type of happiness, mature type of happiness. A happiness which is not derived from the lot of conditioned phenomena. For example, I am dependent on someone to provide, to make me happy. I'm depending on something to make me happy. Then I'm in a very vulnerable situation because those conditions are quite vulnerable. So those lives, those external people, and those external conditions are not permanent. They are always going to change. So therefore, a person who is depending on them also are quite shaky, also are quite vulnerable, because they never know what's going to happen in the next moment. So likewise, we need to understand the vulnerable situation we all are living in. So that is why Buddha's teaching help us to look at from a different angle, to find satisfaction from a different way, to have a kind of a super mundane type of happiness, but always coming from the mundane, worldly type of happiness, but something different, different type of happiness. So that is why you all are actually today gathered here to find out those alternative paths, how to make ourselves happy, satisfied in a noble way. So that is the point which is highlighted. So with that, I'd like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I'd like to open the session for questions.
Avasari Bhante, currently there are 4 questions. Question number 1 is walking mindfulness. Dear Bhante, my walking practice is progressing well and I really enjoy the technique learned from you. Much merits for the guidance. Over the months, I've learned how to use secluded 1-hour practice as well as the small chances and the parts I come across when there is no such possibility. I can do 20 to 30 minutes of walking inside the house using a path which connects the living rooms while other people are talking, watching TV and doing various activities. During these times, I feel the concentration is less, but mindfulness is intact and I am with the walking process. Even if someone comes in front of me and I have to get to a side and wait, I see the thoughts coming about the giving way, recognizing the family member and general feeling about liking and disliking of that person, emerging as thoughts and going away. When I observe the thoughts, I can feel the weight on my heels and some sensations on my soul. These are the signs I use to verify I still have mindfulness related to my walking effort while waiting for the distraction to pass. While my mind is engaged sorting the distraction, I can still see through them and link with the knowing of sensations on my feet. This is the correct technique, Bhante. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I feel like you are progressing and different experiences are explained. A bit difficult to hear. Anyway, as far as I understood your question, so you are going through some changes in your life and time to time experiencing different ordinary experiences, but with some information, some from different viewpoints or from different perspectives. So I feel you are doing well, so you can continue the practice.
Question number 2 of 5. Bhante, can you hear me properly?
Yeah, so you can talk loudly.
Because Bhante, we were saying before that we couldn't hear you properly as well before.
I see.
Maybe there's a sound setting on your laptop.
Can't be. Let me see. Because now I'm experiencing heavy rain.
Maybe that's what it is. It'll be maybe some noise.
Increase the gain of the mic. So can you hear?
I can hear you. Well, I increased the volume already, as long as you can hear me.
I already increased my volume to 100%, but can't increase more.
Okay. Do you want me to repeat that question?
We'll continue with the second one. I think I got the question properly for the first one.
Okay.
We can move to the second.
Okay. Question number 2 of 5, general question. Dear Swaminwansa, is it a good practice to listen to reflection reports by other practitioners as a habit? Sometimes I have to pick between should I listen to your Dhamma sermon or a question and answer, and I tend to select the question and answer due to time constraints. Since I'm trying to build a regular practice, question and answer seems quite easy to relate. Listen to someone else's practice experience and learning Dhamma seems different than listening to a monk's sermon. That's the question. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Actually, by listening to others' questions and the answers, so we can broaden our understanding. But only thing is, it doesn't mean that we have to experience everything that which others are experiencing. So because there are many different paths explained by the Buddha, and we don't need to taste all the paths. Say, for example, to arrive Colombo, there are many, many, many paths available. So we may be going from where we are. So if we are at another place, probably we can arrive from there. So likewise, to come to a certain level, so many different approaches are available. But anyway, those practices are at one level bringing up the same result. For example, in Satipatthana Sutta itself, there are 14 practices explained in the Kayanupassana, the awareness of the body. And then in the Vedanupassana, another one method. In the Chittanupassana, another one method. And in the Dhammanupassana, another five types of approaches are explained. So depending on our skills, depending on our character type, so we may be going through different approaches. We may be taking different approaches, but ultimately the result could be the very, very same. They are the same. There may be slight differences, but there are significant similarities. Say, if you are practicing Anapanasati, you are going through the complete Anapanasati sessions. And there is a situation that you have to arrive, say, unattached, boundless, or non-grasping state of mind. Suppose you are practicing Vedanupassana, through which also you have to arrive at the same level. Unattached, boundless, say, detached, non-grasping type of state. If you are practicing Chittanupassana, also similarly you have to arrive at the same place. If you are practicing rising and falling, similarly you have to arrive at the same place. So likewise, certain milestones are there in the practice, and which is quite common to all the people. So with that, actually we can verify that we are doing something correct. So by listening to others' reports, that we can understand, okay, he has taken this approach. Then we listen to another person's report, we can understand that he has taken this approach. So likewise, they might have taken different approaches, which might be similar to our approach, but it is not a must. So by understanding their approaches, we can broaden our theoretical knowledge. And onto some people that their practice and our practice are in line. So then we can do some sort of a comparison, whether I am experiencing the same thing or I am going to experience something. So likewise. But on the other hand, there are some difficulties or disadvantages as well. Because we know beforehand what's going to happen. So it can become a hindrance. Because our mind is always expecting that to happen. So rather than doing the job right now at this very moment with an open mind, without expecting any results, we may be sort of expecting something and practicing. So that is the wrong approach. So this is the disadvantage of listening to someone else's reports, because we may feel, okay, I am going to happen, or I am going to experience that in the future. I am going to experience that in my next session. So likewise, we may be planning our practice. We may be putting various expectations, introducing various expectations into practice, so that can become a hindrance. So that is the disadvantage. And there are advantages as well as disadvantages, so we have to take it properly. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 7. This is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, this is a question in regards to sila. Would I be committing something wrong by instructing the gardener to use organic herbicide? I'll repeat? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Dear Venerable Bhante, this is a question in regards to sila. Would I be committing something wrong by instructing the gardener to use an organic herbicide to use for weeds in the garden? I remember a Jataka story that a monk who had observed sila for a long period accidentally had to hold a tree while crossing a river. Had the tree leaf broken accidentally, and yet he was worried about it, and for the fact there was no one for him to clarify if he had the worry in his heart. And the story goes on. Dear Bhante, after I started meditating and getting into samadhi, I started seeing trees, grass, flowers around me differently, more alive. Even the time I cut grass using the lawnmower, I feel a bit weird afterwards. I don't know if this is some sort of over-compassion. Anyway, Bhante, I really hope you would clarify my doubt. Much merits and thank you. That's the end of the question. Hopefully you heard.
Yeah, actually, this question is not related to you.
Because as Upasampada monks only we have to concern about this plant life or the fauna and the flora, where we have to be concerned about these plants, various trees. So from the what you call this high ordination, the Upasampada bhikkhus have certain precepts called Bhutagama Pasavitaya Pachitya. So you are not allowed to intentionally cut a tree, intentionally uproot a tree, uproot a plant, intentionally destroy seeds. So this is the precept only available for high-ordained monks, Upasampada bhikkhus. But for the lay people, there is no such. Now, suppose there is a kind of a blocking tree available to a monk's kuti, monk's dwelling place. Still, there is a possibility that he can hint it to another lay person, to another samane, a novice monk, and then he can remove it. That is also allowed. So therefore, you don't need to go to an extreme that I should never cut a tree, I should never harm a plant, I should never pluck a flower, I should never break a leaf. So that is going to an extreme. That is very much like an Atthakilamatan yoga, self-mortification. And certain ascetics actually have done that, like followers of the Nigantanatha Buddha. So they probably have done that. So Buddha didn't go to such extreme. So his teaching is not only have the morality, but also have the reflection, also have the wisdom. So therefore, this morality and wisdom has to go hand in hand. So we need to understand what is our range of the precepts. So if we are practicing 5 precepts, so just be happy with it. Happy in the sense, I'm not asking you to not to improve it. Rather, you don't have to entertain doubts. Say 5 precepts, so you are not killing anyone intention. You are not stealing intention. You are not conducting any sexual misconduct. And you are not lying. And you are not using any intoxicants. So these are the 5 precepts. So if you are honestly trying to preserve these precepts, so a lot of happiness can be derived. And while doing that, you don't need to think about monk's precepts. The monk's precepts are completely far away. And those are much broader, and many precepts are there, not just 5. So likewise, eating at night is not allowed for monks. And similarly, there are different precepts are available for monks, high ordained monks, and lay people doesn't have to really worry about those things. They don't need to doubt about those, thinking that I have to practice it. I think therefore you have to clarify that doubt. Okay.
Question number 4 of 7. This is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, the story of Venerable Sopaka is fascinating. He became an arahant at the age of 7, and answers he had given to 10 questions asked by the Lord Buddha is comprehensive. Was there anything mentioned about his past lives in the scriptures? What was his thinking patterns as a child 7 years old? On the first place, he was in utter devastation with the way he was treated as a child by his stepfather. In the midst of all these difficulties, he was able to shift his viewpoint when Lord Buddha asked him to do so. Would you be able to share what you know about Venerable Sopaka with us, Bhante? I think there is a lot we can learn here. Much appreciation and merits as always. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Interesting question, but unfortunately, I can't remember the past lives and the past stories of the Venerable Sopaka. Because in order to look at it, I have to go to certain books talking about these 88 disciples of the Buddha and certain other say, disciples. So let me go through those. Probably next week, I'll give an answer. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 7. General question. Dear Bhante, how do you keep yourself calm and not give in to anger and aggression when someone you're having a conversation with has an opposing view and wants to flick the same view onto you? Thank you for your valuable guidance. That's the end of the question.
Chaptu, you have to repeat.
Okay, yeah. Dear Bhante, how do you keep yourself calm and not give in to anger and aggression when someone you're having a conversation with has an opposing view and wants to flick the same view onto you? Thank you for your valuable guidance. That's the end of the question.
So you are asking from me that am I able to maintain? Interesting. Actually, interesting question. So this is where actually we have to understand the samadhi. So if you carefully understand samadhi, so that is where Buddha mentioned even a correct view should not be grasped. So this is something that appear like contradicting. So typically we think the right view is to grasp the right view. There may be say 100 views available, and assume I'm just giving a submission, I'm just giving an example. Assume that there are 100 views, and among them only one is the right view. So I should hold that right view. So this is the typical theoretical or logical understanding we have. But according to Buddha, that is not the right view. Even the right view, Buddha say, if you are grasping, then you are not properly practicing right view. So therefore, Buddha's approach is quite different in a way. It's going against the typical way of thinking. It's going against the typical rational thinking. So as I mentioned, if we think, okay, something is correct, okay, I should hold it. I should stand for it. And I should fight for it. So this is what we typically think. So that is why all these religious wars and arguments and conversions, killings, etc. is happening all around the world. But Buddha's approach is quite different. So he mentioned the right view is of twofold. The first type of right view is the mundane type of right view, where you still have some sort of a personal idea or personality, we can say. And with that, you are doing something wholesome. And with the belief, okay, there is a consequence. There is a result. So if you are practicing, if you are doing something good, you may get the good result. If you are practicing something wrong, then you get the bad result. So the belief of the karma. So this is the right view attributed at the mundane level. So there actually we have to stand on the correct side, or what is kusala, what is wrong, what is correct, and on the other hand we have to believe in the karma. And still there is a personality, there is a belief of a person. So therefore Buddha mentioned it is mundane and based on certain amount of pains, asavas, but still giving good results. What you call as sasava punya bhagya upadi vepakka. It is still deluded, or still it is with pains, but giving good results, and it is mundane. But there's another type of right view, that is the supramundane. Anasava lokuttara magdanga. Arya anasava lokuttara magdanga. So when it comes to the supramundane type of right view, there Buddha mentioned, which is anasava, which is free from any taints, and which is noble. Anasava, lokuttara, which is supramundane, madganga, which is the path factor. So when it comes to this type of supramundane type of right view, it doesn't say that you have to hold it.
If you are holding to something, even something correct, if you are holding, then you are not properly practicing the right way. Therefore, grasping is not allowed in the right way. So if you are grasping anything, then you are not practicing right way. So therefore, it is something different or something difficult that we can understand. So as we are continuing our practice, so we are shifting to this super mundane type of practice, and we are recognizing how eye making, mind making is happening, and how some sort of grasping is happening, some sort of personification or self appropriation is going to happen. So accordingly, we are discarding them. Accordingly, we are disclaiming them. So we are not promoting any self. We are not promoting an individual. We are not promoting a self-will. And we are not holding anything. So that is very beautifully explained in the Pachanagotta Sutta, available in the Nidana Samyutta. Very interesting. And there Buddha mentioned, so we understand, okay, things are happening according to different reasons, causes and conditions. And when we have avijja, when we have ignorance, then there is grasping. But there is no ignorance, there can't be any grasping. So therefore, I have given kind of a Dhamma-related answer. So we as non-arahants, so we may grasp certain things. So when someone is attacking, when someone is trying to go against or giving a completely opposite answer, if we are holding something, then we may hurt. We may feel unsatisfied. We may feel offended. So that represents that certain amount of grasping available in ourselves. Yeah. Okay, Chatur.
Question number 6 of 8. This is general question. Dear Bhante, when is the time one should be vigilant about yoniso manasikara during the mindfulness practice? When we start, we just go ahead with bare attention only. During Dhamma sermons, we hear a lot about yoniso manasikara and thought when we should be focusing on this aspect. Appreciate if Bhante can explain how we can connect this with our practice. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, it is an evolving factor. So yoniso manasikara is a kind of a broad term, and different levels of yoniso manasikara, therefore we can say, so rather than typically keeping our attention only at the surface level, so during the mindfulness practice, at one stage, so we are asked to see details. We are asked to look at from different angles. We are asked to understand subtle details. So that is where we are encouraging yoniso manasikara. So typically our minds satisfy with the outside appearance or the color, not penetrating inside, not searching or not looking towards the causes and conditions. But through the yoniso manasikara, rather than simply satisfied with this surface glancing type of knowledge, so we are requested to penetrate. We are searching more details, and we are looking at the thing from different views. So that encourages the yoniso manasikara. So that actually happens after mindfulness is established. So first of all, we need to establish mindfulness. And once mindfulness is established, then that object, but we have already established mindfulness, has to be inquired. Has to be observed carefully, has to be examined carefully. So that is where the starting point of the yoniso manasikara. Typically, actually, at that time, we call it as sati sampajanya, clear comprehension. But that training, that exercise, really trigger yoniso manasikara.
Question number 7 of 9, walking mindfulness. Dear Bhante, question and answer. I heard you mentioning about walking practice. During question and answer, I have heard you mentioning about walking practice, balancing the mindfulness practice, and we should give the equal emphasis as sitting. What is the balancing act of the walking practice? Thank you for your explanation and guidance. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. So I mentioned that in the morning during the signal session, don't know you are participant in the morning session. So anyway, as you know, there are five faculties Buddha mentioned: Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya. Saddha is the faith, Virya is the effort, Sati is the mindfulness, Samadhi is the concentration, Panya is the wisdom. So mindfulness is in the middle, so it is being balancing. So it does the balancing task. Balancing of panya, the wisdom, with the saddha, the faith, and again the balancing of effort, virya, with the concentration, samadhi. So likewise, some sort of a balancing has to happen. So this has to do while practicing. This has to do while you are continuing a session. Now suppose if someone is only practicing the sitting, there is a higher tendency that he is more contributing towards concentration, and there is a possibility that his concentration go beyond mindfulness, and mindfulness then may be omitted or neglected, not given enough priority, and now you are more concerned about developing concentration. So this is where we sometimes go wrong, or we give wrong priorities. But on the other hand, in the walking session, mostly the walking practice is encouraging mindfulness and wisdom. So therefore, having my walking and sitting alternatively, and I mean practicing parallelly as a alternative practices, so this is where we can actually have a good balance of our practice. So that is why I always encourage that people to practice walking as well as sitting. Actually, you yourself have to understand this balance. I can simply guide you, but what is the gap balance is something that we have to investigate. So, for example, in the certain Bojjhanga related suttas, Agni Sutta, so Buddha mentioned that the samadhi, tranquility, and equanimity. So they are more towards, or they are more biased with the concentration. They are more biased with the some sort of lethargic kind of practice. But on the other hand, say investigation, dhammavichaya, then piti, rupture, effort, virya. So they are onto the other side, which are more active, and there's the possibility of leading towards some sort of a frustration. So these two sides have to be properly balanced. So the balancing part is done by the mindfulness. Yeah.
Question number 8 of 9. This is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, when we are not meditating in times of walking, sitting, and conversation, or doing something else, how should we think according to that task? For example, when normally walking across the corridor, must we notice the objects that we come across? And must we think before giving an answer to a question and think how the answer will affect something? That's the end of the question.
I mean, so this is not something, I mean, if you are practicing mindfulness, it is not a big deal. I feel like you are practicing mindfulness is something not away from your life. So you are connecting with your life, and say you are being answering a question, so it may come automatically. The answer may come automatically, and reflections may be happening quickly because mind is fairly developed with mindfulness and is not cluttered. So therefore, mindfulness practice is not a hindrance or a blockage to answer or to properly react to a proper situation. But on the other hand, it will give you an opportunity to look at from different angles. Say there is an incident happening. So rather than impulsively react, so you may be able to observe from different angles what is really the best solution, best approach. And accordingly, you can get the best decision. Yeah.
Bhante, we've actually gone over time. We have one question. It's a very short one.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Question 9, general question. Dear Bhante, does multitasking destroy one's brain? That's the end of the question.
Multitasking destroy one's what?
Brain.
Brain.
Yeah.
Okay, I think I have shown one day a video. So this is the recent finding. Maybe I'll show you that. So this is the recent finding from by the scientists. So according to them, what happens is not really multitasking, but our mind or our brain is shifting from one task to another task, and at that time you are not paying enough attention to a particular task. So without giving enough attention to a particular task, you are trying to handle another task, which similarly requires the amount of brain power. I mean, it is not something kind of ordinary task, but more brain consuming, more mind consuming type of task. So it requires the amount of your attention. If you are trying to handle several tasks of that type at the same time, so that is where the multitasking becoming a real problem to the brain. Because each task that you are handling right now requires or requests a fair amount of your attention, and you still have to handle several of them. So at that time, your mind has to shift from one task to the other task quickly. So therefore, not giving enough attention to those, proper attention to them. And on the other hand, to each task, there may be a different part of your brain has to be activated. Now, switching has to happen from different places available in the brain very quickly, and that actually harms the brain. So that is the scientific finding right now available. Actually, I had a good video explaining that. Give me a second, I might be able to find it. I'm going to share the screen so that you all can look at that.
Turns out that multitasking is a myth. We think that we're doing a whole bunch of things at once, but we're not actually, because the brain doesn't work that way. And a number of studies now have shown, from Earl Miller's lab at MIT and others, that what we're really doing is we're paying attention to one thing for a little bit of time, and then another, and then another, and then we come back around to the first. And all of these are separate projects that are occurring in separate parts of the brain. They require a separate start time, a separate monitoring process. And you end up fractionating your attention into little bits and pieces, not really engaging fully in any one thing. All that switching across tasks comes with a neurobiological cost. It depletes resources. So after an hour or two of attempting to multitask, if we find that we're tired and we can't focus, it's because those very neurochemicals we needed to focus are now gone. There are some jobs that require not multitasking, because we know it doesn't exist, but this kind of rapid switching. I'm air traffic controller, simultaneous translator at the UN, journalists, monitoring all these different things at once. And we can take a tip from the air traffic controllers who, as part of their duty cycle, are required after every hour and a half or 2 hours of work, it's mandated that they take a 15 to 30 minute break. And that means an unplugged, disconnected break where they go for a walk, or they listen to music, they exercise, something to restore all of the burned up neurochemicals. You might ask, during this period of our evolution, when there's all this information, is the brain adapting and changing? And yes, it is. The brain adapts and changes all the time. Evolution is happening all the time. Unfortunately, it's rather sluggish. We talk about it in terms of evolutionary lag. And generally speaking, it takes about 20,000 years for the brain to catch up with the way the environment is, and in terms of how it's encoded in the genome. So 20,000 years from now, our brains may have evolved to deal with it. In the meantime, we have to employ strategies, just a little bit more self-discipline than we currently use, to filter out unwanted or unnecessary input. I'm not talking about never letting something frivolous or fun in, but I'm talking about adopting a kind of a habit of allowing yourself to focus on one thing at a time for at least a few hours a day.
Okay, I think answer is given.
I agree.
Yeah.
That's the last of the questions for today, and we've gone over time, so I'll finish up very quickly. Firstly, I'd like to thank Bante and pass on our appreciation and merits. Also to the people seen and unseen working behind to make this program a success. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, this would not go ahead. With that, I'd like to end the program. Theravan Sarnai.
Yeah, Theravan Sarnai.